Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Today, we're diving into sources detailing, well, a really novel machine learning approach, the mission. It's about building a skin cancer prediction model, one that finally works well and with incredibly high accuracy across all ethnic populations. And they're leveraging that huge data set from the All of Us research program.
It really is more than just another model. It feels like a necessary step towards, you know, health equity. They're looking beyond just the basic genetic risks. They're pulling in real-world factors, income, insurance status, even specific medications people might be taking. The goal seems to be true precision medicine, really aimed squarely at tackling some of these long-standing health disparities.
Okay, let's unpack that. Maybe we should start with the core problem, because the way most people think about skin cancer, it can be pretty misleading. We often associate it primarily with lighter skin tones, mainly because the incidence rates are higher there. But here's the surprising and really critical fact. Individuals from non-European ancestries might have lower overall incidence, yes, but they face significantly poorer outcomes when they do get diagnosed.
That outcome gap.
Yeah.
That's the real crux of the disparity, isn't it? It's stark. For people with darker skin, the cancer is often caught much, much later, at more advanced stages. And a big reason for that is how it presents. The lesions can show up in less obvious, non-sun-exposed places like the palms of the hands, soles of the feet, or even mucous membranes.
Places you wouldn't typically check for sun damage.
Exactly.
And because of that unusual presentation, they get missed or misidentified easily. The sources pointed out these tumors are often confused with really common things. Warts, fungal infections, maybe diabetic ulcers. So early detection becomes a huge challenge if clinicians aren't specifically looking for cancer in those unusual spots.
Right. So if that diagnostic difficulty is driving this terrible gap in outcomes, the question becomes, how do you build a prediction tool that works effectively for everyone? The team was really asking, how can we create a robust system? One that integrates everything, genetics, yes, but also socioeconomic status, lifestyle, to flag patients who need that specialized exam before the cancer gets advanced, no matter their background.
That really sets the stage for the research itself. But before we get into the nuts and bolts, the methodology, we should definitely give credit to the team behind this multi-ethnic approach.
Absolutely. Let's take a moment to celebrate the work here. It's researchers led by Matteo Gantonio and Kelly A. Fraser from the University of California, San Diego, working alongside colleagues from Arizona State University. They've really pushed forward our understanding of multi-ethnic skin cancer risk prediction.
Okay, so context. Skin cancer rates are rising in the U.S., and while UV exposure is, you know, a major factor, the risk is definitely more complicated than just sun exposure.
Oh, much more complicated. It's tied up with age, sex, whether someone's had cancer before, lifestyle choices, and critically, those social determinants of health, SDOH, as they're often called. Things like income, education, access to care.
And there were previous prediction models, right? Some apparently had pretty good accuracy on paper.
Yes, some existed, and a few claimed accuracy, over 80%, but they had really severe limitations. Major limitations. They were pretty much exclusively trained and tested on non-Hispanic white individuals. That's a huge blind spot. Plus, they often required skin-specific data that's just hard to get at scale, like specialized dermatological imaging. That makes them basically impractical for these massive, broad health databases like All of Us. They just weren't built for the kind of diversity or scale needed today.
And digging into the variables they did include in this new model, it's fascinating how they pull in things you might not immediately connect, like the use of PDFA-A inhibitors. We're talking about drugs like sildenafil, tadalafil, commonly used for erectile dysfunction. What's the link they're suggesting there?
Yes, that connection is really interesting. It points towards a potential biological mechanism they uncovered, likely through analyzing associations in the data. The sources detail this biological idea. Certain cancer-causing mutations, like in the BRAF gene, actually seem to decrease the expression of the PDE5A enzyme. And since low levels of PDE5A might help promote malignant melanoma, the theory is that using drugs that block PDE5A could potentially inadvertently worsen that risk pathway.
Wow.
It's a really neat example of how digging through large-scale population data can potentially connect a specific drug class to a complex genetic disease pathway, something you might miss otherwise.
And speaking of complexities and disparities, the data also revealed something quite troubling about the age of diagnosis across different groups.
This was a stark finding. They showed that individuals of non-European descent, so African, admixed American, East Asian, Middle Eastern ancestries, tend to be diagnosed with skin cancer significantly younger than individuals of European descent. For instance, people of African descent were diagnosed on average 8.3 years earlier.
8 years. That's a huge difference. It just screams that something is being missed, doesn't it?
It really does. It suggests that by the time many patients from these groups are diagnosed, the cancer might already be more aggressive or advanced, which circles right back to those poorer outcomes we started with.
So clearly, we need a solution built on broad, diverse data to catch these cases much earlier.
Exactly. And that brings us neatly to the core methodology they used. To tackle this head-on, the researchers leveraged that massive, diverse All of Us Research Program database. We're talking over 400,000 participants.
Wow.
And within that group, about 4.37% had a skin cancer diagnosis reported.
And the specific tool they chose was extreme gradient boosting, XGBoost. Now, given they're putting in dozens of variables, income, education, genetics, location, many of which are probably correlated with each other, wouldn't a standard regression model kind of struggle with that, get confused by the multicollinearity and just produce noise?
That's precisely why XGBoost was such a smart choice here. Standard linear models, like logistic regression, they tend to assume that effects are independent and just add up.
Yeah.
But when you have factors that overlap or are redundant, like income and maybe insurance status or education, linear models can get messy, their predictions become unstable. XGBoost is different. It's really robust. It's specifically designed to model those crucial nonlinear relationships between variables. And it handles missing data and highly correlated data much better than standard regression.
Yeah.
Plus, it has built-in features, regularization techniques like Lasso and Ridge, to prevent it from overfitting, basically, getting too complex and just memorizing the training data instead of learning general patterns.
So it can handle the complexity without getting lost in it. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And they really did throw a lot of inputs at it. Can we quickly recap the kinds of variables they used?
Absolutely. They were very comprehensive. On the genetic side, they didn't just rely on self-reported ancestry labels, which can be imprecise. They use the coordinates from 16 genotype principal components, or PCs. You can think of these PCs as mathematical summaries that capture the nuances of a person's genetic ancestry. This allows for a much more accurate analysis, especially for individuals with mixed or admixed heritage.
Right, capturing that complexity. And then the social determinants.
Yep. The SDOH factors were in there. Yeah. Annual income, insurance status, education level, even living situation. Plus, lifestyle variables, alcohol use, smoking status. They also included geographical coordinates, latitude and longitude, basically as a proxy for UV exposure levels.
Clever.
And of course, those key clinical factors. Mm-hmm. Age, sex, any previous history of non-skin cancer, and that PDE5A inhibitor use we discussed.
So before unleashing XGBoost, did they try the standard approach first, just to see?
They did. They needed a baseline. They ran a standard logistic regression model using all those same variables. And the results pretty much confirmed their initial hypothesis. The performance was poor. Specifically, it had a low positive predictive value, or PPV.
Okay, PPV, quick translation for us. If that standard model flags a patient as positive for skin cancer risk, how often is it actually correct?
Not nearly often enough to be clinically useful. A low PPV means the model generates way too many false positives. For every actual cancer patient it correctly identifies, it incorrectly flags many healthy people. That sends clinicians chasing down too many leads that go nowhere. It just wouldn't work in practice. The F1 statistic, which is a measure that balances precision and recall, basically how good it is at finding the true positives without too many false alarms that F1 was dismal, only 0.103 for the logistic regression.
Yeah, 0.103. That's basically unusable. But this is where XGBoost really made a difference, right? The multi-ethnic model, the one trained on all the participants.
Huge difference. It was a massive leap forward in performance. For participants of European ancestries, the F1 statistic jumped to a remarkable 0.903. Very accurate. But the real win, especially considering the goal of reducing disparities, was the performance in non-European ancestries. There, the F1 statistic hit 0.810.
An F1 score of 0.810 for those populations where previous models were basically useless That's incredibly promising. It's real proof that this multi-ethnic, multi-factor approach actually works. And the sources mentioned that trying to build separate models only using data from non-European groups just didn't work, right? They were underpowered.
Exactly. Those models failed badly, with a mean F1 score around 0.067, barely better than the logistic regression. Combining everyone into one multi-ethnic training set was definitely the key strategy. It leveraged the larger numbers while still allowing the model to learn specific patterns for different groups.
Now, this brings us to one of the most interesting findings, what you call the age paradox. Age turned out to be the single most important feature.
By far. It accounted for something like 71% of the model's predictive power, measured by a metric called gain.
Wait a second. If age was that important, why did the standard linear models fail so badly? Usually, linear regression is pretty good at picking up strong correlations like age and disease risk.
But that's the key. Linear models treat age as a simple additive factor. Its effect is assumed to be consistent across the board. When you throw in dozens of other complex interacting variables, that simple linear effect of age can get washed out, diluted, or masked by the noise. XGBoost doesn't make that assumption of linearity. It discovered that age isn't just correlated with risk, it's acting as a critical nonlinear filter or modulator for all the other risk factors.
How did they prove that?
They did a crucial test. They removed age entirely from the model and reran the predictions.
And the result?
It was catastrophic for accuracy. Removing age caused the F1 score to plummet to 0.217. And get this, it led to a 29-fold increase in false positives. Without age to guide it, the model started massively overpredicting skin cancer, especially in older individuals. It showed that age isn't just adding risk, it's fundamentally changing how other variables, like maybe that PDE5A use or smoking history, contribute to the overall risk score. Wow. It's complex.
So age is like the scaffolding upon which all the other risks are interpreted by the model. Fascinating. And genetics, the PCs, still played a significant role, even with age being dominant.
Oh, absolutely. When they removed the genotype PCs from the prediction step, the accuracy took a noticeable hit. The F1 score dropped down to 0.619. This strongly suggests that those genetic summaries are capturing unique aspects of risk, maybe related to inherent skin properties, pigmentation pathways, or immune responses, things that aren't fully captured by the clinical, lifestyle, or even the SDOH factors alone.
And there was also a specific insight for individuals with mixed ancestry, wasn't there?
Yes, a really interesting one. For participants identified as admixed American, AMR, or categorized as other, OTH, the model showed something intriguing in the genetic data. The individuals within these groups who actually had skin cancer tended to cluster genetically closer to individuals of European ancestries in that principal component space we talked about.
Meaning?
It provides direct evidence that the proportion of European genetic ancestry significantly influences their skin cancer risk, even after you account for their self-reported background or where they live. Genetics still matters independently.
Okay, so we have this high-performing model. What does this actually mean for doctors and patients in the clinic?
Well, that high F1 score, the 0.810 for non-European ancestries, is really the headline here for clinical impact. It confirms that this kind of multi-ethnic approach can significantly improve prediction accuracy in those populations that have been historically underserved by older risk models.
Well,
so potentially, clinicians could use a tool based on this model to more effectively identify which patients, based on their complete risk profile, not just ancestry, but genetics, social factors, lifestyle, should be prioritized for that thorough whole-body skin cancer exam by a specialist, by a dermatologist.
It seems like a way to move beyond just using basic demographics or maybe one or two risk factors to decide who needs screening. But when you see factors like annual income showing up as predictive, it does raise a critical question, doesn't it? Is the model truly predicting the biological risk of getting cancer? Or is it, to some extent, predicting who has better access to healthcare, which leads to diagnosis? How do you disentangle that?
That is the million-dollar question, and it's absolutely essential to consider. The strength of a sophisticated model like XGBoost is that it allows us to start probing those nonlinear interactions, which can help differentiate these effects. For instance, they found that the predictive impact of having a previous cancer history was much stronger in older individuals, a synergistic effect. But interestingly, in younger individuals, the interplay between age, genetic ancestry, specifically one of the TCs, PC2, and annual income, seemed much more pronounced.
What does that suggest?
Well, it might suggest that for early onset risk, genetics and socioeconomic factors, like wealth, perhaps proxying access to early screening or healthier environments, are playing a stronger combined role. It doesn't fully separate biology from access, but it shows the model is capturing these complex interactions, not just simple correlations.
That kind of nuance is exactly what you need for truly personalized medicine, right?
Right.
Knowing how these factors interact lets you target interventions much more precisely.
Precisely. And one last point on practicality. The model showed impressive robustness because many of those SDOH factors are often correlated, like income, education, insurance, tend to track together. The team tested what happened if they removed a single SDOH variable, say education level. They found it had only a minimal impact on the overall prediction accuracy.
That's actually huge for real-world use.
It is. It suggests the model isn't overly reliant on any single piece of potentially noisy or missing social data. It can likely perform well even with the kind of incomplete patient records that are common in real clinical systems.
And they did suggest ways to make it even better in the future.
Yes, they pointed towards integrating additional features that weren't available in the current All of Us dataset snapshot they used. Things like plasma vitamin D levels, which have been linked to skin cancer, or maybe more refined polygenic risk stores that are specifically calculated for skin pigmentation traits. Adding those could potentially push that accuracy even higher.
Okay, so wrapping this part up, what's the core message we should take away from this work?
I think it powerfully confirms the importance of looking at nonlinear interactions in complex diseases, especially how factors like age and genetics deeply influence risk in ways simple models miss. It delivers a robust, data-driven approach that really moves beyond relying just on broad ancestry categories. And by doing that, it offers a tangible way to improve early detection and start closing some of those persistent clinical disparities in skin cancer outcomes.
So let me try to summarize the big take-home message for you listening. Essentially, a multi-ethnic machine learning model, one using sophisticated techniques like XGBoost and integrating a really wide range of risk factors, genetics, socioeconomic status, age, lifestyle, this kind of comprehensive model is highly effective. It can accurately identify skin cancer patients across diverse ancestries far better than previous methods.
Which really leaves us with a thought-provoking question for the future of medicine, doesn't it? If these complex, nonlinear machine learning models that weave together SDOH, genetics, and clinical data are proving this successful for a condition like skin cancer, well, how could this broader, more holistic approach revolutionize the way we predict risk or even diagnose other really complex diseases? Thinking about things like cardiovascular disease or diabetes or maybe even certain autoimmune conditions. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.